Well, hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Wander's wonderful podcast. Today, we have Rick Hennessy, one of Wander's strategists leading our client projects, such as SATCOM and Allstate. Rick has over 10 years of experience as a software engineer and designer, and Rick's curiosity about technology and belief that empathy is the fuel to build connections in people's lives has led him to produce meaningful results. He likes to play guitar, host dinner parties, and watch science fiction movies. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what's your favorite science fiction movie? Let's start with that.
Oh, favorite science fiction. I love science fiction. It's been a great year for science fiction, too, because, we've had Dune come out, and I love the narrative of Dune. That book is meaty. And it's brilliant. I think this year, Dune was probably my favorite.
I haven't seen it, but I'll definitely have to check it out. Yeah. All right. So let's start our interview with a quick round of rapid fire questions. Are you ready, Rick?
Let's go.
All right. Let's go. So where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania on the East Coast, United States.
On the East Coast, United States. All right. And where are you now?
I am still in the same area.
Must be a great area.
I promise I've moved.
Are you sure you moved down the street?
Yeah. I mean, I built a treehouse. I've traveled and lived in three different countries since then. And I've moved back to the area.
Okay. All right. Which three countries did you live in?
I lived in Australia, England, and China.
Amazing. Oh my gosh, we got to talk about your experience in China.
I would love to. It's a great place.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to it. So let's move forward. What book do you think everyone should read?
So this is kind of nerdy and a little meta. But there's this book by Mortimer J. Adler called How to Read a Book. And it's really interesting. It helps you to think about the type of literature that you're reading and how to absorb it more efficiently. It's a terrific book.
Oh, wow. So it's a book about how to read a book. I didn't know there was a proper way to read a book. I thought you just open up the pages, read the book, and then that's that.
Yeah. No, it's wild. I think for different types of written language, there are different ways to absorb it and to make it easier to apply to whatever you're trying to achieve. And the people might do this intuitively without even knowing it, but I think that Mortimer J. Adler, if at the very least, will give you an intro into some different ways to think about how to approach written language.
Gotcha. So I guess for all those overachievers who want to know how to properly read a book, that's a great book to read.
Yep.
All right. What is one app you cannot live without?
Google Maps.
Google Maps.
I like Google Maps. Yeah. You got to have it.
Yeah. Do you remember the days when you had to like fold the maps the right way?
I love physical maps. I love maps in general. I know exactly what you're talking about. And if you don't fold it the right way, then it's like some sort of origami puzzle to like get it to work in your vehicle or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Jenny, how about the map quest and printing out the directions?
Oh, you know, I kind of skipped map quest altogether. I went from foldable maps to GPS. And I have a tendency to do that with technology. I'll go from like, iPhone 7 to then like jump to like iPhone 11.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Because for me, it's like, if it's not broken, I'll keep it until like the absolute like necessary where I have to like upgrade my technology. And it drives my boyfriend crazy. He's like, how do you work in tech and not have the latest tech? I was like, I don't know. I think that's why I'm in UX, because like I just always have the worst experiences with technology.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what do you think is the best invention of all time?
That's a good one. You know, my mind immediately goes to like the things that we've advanced in terms of healthcare. Like the MNRI vaccine, I think that's an excellent invention. The ability for that thinking to be able to change our lives in a way that's meaningful is.
I think that's the technology is one side too, but the other part of that would be, without going into detail with it, is the politics and the implementation of rolling out a technology like that to places that really need them. So without going into further into it, because we could have a whole interview around that.
I love that. That is a great tangent. Well, let's bookmark that. Everyone, we'll see you later. We'll talk.
Sounds good. All right. What is your all-time favorite accomplishment?
Oh, wow. Is this like in the same category as what's your favorite movie? And then you have to pick a genre?
Well, something that you're most proud of.
I think this is also a moment to humble brag too. I'm not sure which way to go with it though.
Humble brag, however you want to go. Whatever you want the world to know about you.
I think that one of the things that I'm really proud of is the community of people that I've been able to build as I've grown, both as a professional and just personally. And noticing more and more, especially in the last 2 years, how important community is to be able to survive and to thrive, especially amidst adversity. And I see community in whatever facet that you're in life, they're kind of like the roots of your system. So like, you know, the storms are going to come and try to blow you over, but hopefully you have enough roots in your system that can keep you up and keep you moving. And I think being isolated as an individual and standing as a leader, you always have roots around you. And I'm just like thankful for the roots that have decided to grow with me. And that's been really good.
Last question in the rapid fire round. What's the biggest challenge you're working on now?
Oh, that's a good one. So I think one of the bigger challenges that I'm working on now is it has to do with collaboration, and it has to do with working with different types of people and who might struggle with thinking they're creative or not. And I think that we live in a world that we need to be able to collaborate and create together to create results that are just incredible. Like if we want that 10x result, it's not going to come from any one person. It's going to come from the a combined effort, or at least I think we significantly raise our chances of a 10x benefit from a wider collaborative net. And that's like one of the things I've been thinking about more lately, and how to include people in a way where there's more of a dialogue and transparency. But along with that comes with like a host of other things that are really challenging. Like I think for people to collaborate well together, there needs to be a certain sense of like vulnerability with what they bring to the table. There needs to be like this like humility to allow ideas to flourish and not die before there's enough thought put into them. But there's like this subtle dance that happens when you are working through problems with teams that that's really exciting to me. I like that. So that's one of I think that's the biggest problem right now.
Yeah, that certainly is a big challenge of like, how do you even start that dance with a team that, let's say you're new to a product team? How how do you even approach collaboration when you don't even know if we're using the dance metaphor, what music do you even choose to dance to, right?
I love that, and transitioning to like music. So I think one of the ways that I think about collaboration is like the score of a symphony or something like that, where like, okay, you have like these different people that are playing different parts. You have like your first chair of each different section that leads the people in that specific instrument group. And they each play a role in executing a script, essentially. And then you have a conductor out front whom is helping people to be part of a singular movement. And I think that one of the things that's been helpful for me to think about collaborating with other people is to look at the system of people as kind of like this orchestra, and who is playing what part, and what chair are they in, and how can I help them to become better in the chair that they're in? And really, I just see myself as a facilitator, because I can't know everything, like coming back to like the 10X and like being able to collaborate with other people. So I think my role is to help them to be the best player in the chair that they're at, and then to help the team identify who's missing from what chair. And
So how, if we can elaborate that a little bit further, what advice would you give to product leaders on how they can decide what roles everyone's playing and how they can best conduct the symphony, like collaboration?
Yeah. Well, one of the things is just this idea that you are all part of a movement that's producing an experience that everyone else is going to enjoy. I think one of the first things that it's like the elephant in the room every time is just like, everyone needs to trust that the conductor is leading everyone in a way that's going to produce the best experience. And you all need to trust that the score that you're playing is great and the people are going to enjoy it. And I think that before you even get to like who's in the chair and are they the good part, it's just kind of like assessing if people trust that the score is right and if they trust that the experience and what the people in the audience are going to hear is worth hearing. And then helping to like talk about that elephant in the room and helping people to understand, like getting on the same page. We're all on the same team here. It doesn't matter if like you are the brass section or you are like the timpani in the back. Like, I know that you don't play as much, but like you're important because we want that part to like really sing. So and it's amazing what can happen when everyone comes to the room with a sense of humility and realizing that like we can't have one without the other to get that 10X experience that we need. And I'm still working on that and figuring out how to do that better. Like, I wish, it's iterative for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned humility a few times now, humility and vulnerability in a team. How do you do that? It's so difficult for someone to say, I'm here to support a greater cause and I want to be humble to this team. But how does one actually implement that in their daily workflow?
I think one way is just by practicing being that in the team. So some things that come to mind immediately that are not very popular, like admitting your mistakes and be like, yeah, this is where I messed up, but then being accountable to it, doing what you say you're going to do, giving space for people to be able to express their concerns and their wins in a way that you need to make room for people to do that. Like, I think it's like, it's making space for people to be human. And in our process, a lot of times we're so focused on the process that we forget that it's a human making the process work. And like, you need to make space for human in the process. And just, I think that I try to make space for a human to exist in a process. So like, yeah, having fun and making sure that people have a chance to feel heard, giving space for people to express themselves in where they're going, and understanding, helping to giving them space to just be human. I don't know else to say that. Yeah.
And a couple of things you touched upon that really resonated with me. One is to have fun. I know that sounds so basic and dumb, but like, if you're not enjoying what you do and if you're not having fun, then you're doing something wrong, right? Or you're in the wrong team, in my opinion. I mean, you spend majority of your time working, so why not make it as enjoyable as possible, right? And that also fuels into having a better collaboration because it builds trust that everyone's there to, one, build the best product or the best mission or whatever it is. And the second thing that you mentioned is, you said give people the space, but also hold them accountable to what they're doing. And I think that is, again, such a simple, underrated thing to have in your team, like making sure that there's always one person that's accountable for whatever it is that the team is working on. Because if you don't have that accountability, then everyone's going to be like, well, it wasn't me. It's not my responsibility. So.
Yeah. And that becomes really interesting because like in a collaborative environment, like we talk about like different structures of teams and the hierarchy of like whom is in charge of what. So like, I think in some ways a really flat kind of structure lends itself to like the best kind of collaborative like environment, but not always a flat structure that is like more democratic in the decision making doesn't always lend itself to the best accountability in terms of being able to make decisions moving forward, that kind of stuff. And that's all like those different ways of thinking are completely fine. I think that there's no better or worse way. Each structure has its benefit for the specific type of thing you're trying to create. As a leader and being strong as a leader in keeping people accountable is really helpful. And not doubting your team and the information that they're giving you so that you can keep moving forward. I think that being proactive and making decisions, failing fast is really helpful. Because you just keep failing forward essentially. And I think accountability might break in some leadership structures when you stop trusting as a leader that you're failing forward, and that becomes difficult.
So let's go back to accountability and structure, if you don't mind, like elaborating just a little bit more, so I can like lead way and jump into that.
Sure. But one of the ways that, like just coming back to the whole accountability and collaboration, I think that there are different types of organizations that and the structure of that organization that lend itself to collaboration more easily. So a very flat structure might have less friction for collaboration as opposed to like a very hierarchical type of organization.
Yeah. One thing that, one like quick quote that I recently learned was like, as a leader, what you expect is what you should inspect. And that really resonated with me because it's like, you know, you can hold someone accountable, but how you hold them is like, what are the things that are really important to you to, as a leader, to keep that person accountable?
Like, so like there are different types of structures in startups, and I think that those different structures lend themselves to collaboration and being able to efficiently work together. But then there are downsides to that as well, maybe.
Right. So where I was trying to go was, you know, in a growing startup, how do you see collaboration changing, especially with more people investing into user experience? And we're now seeing this term design operations coming about. So, you know, how does design fit in with a bigger picture of a growing startup?
Sure. So more specifically, are you thinking like, okay, we're in growth phase, or we're in our second growth phase and we are adding employees to our roster like crazy. So
exactly. Yeah. We just talked about like having a flat structure and that democracy assists in the collaboration and it's easier to hold people accountable. But as you're scaling away from that flat structure, how do you then ensure that there's continuous collaboration amongst the team, especially when, you know, certain companies, certain startups have to scale really fast. So they're adding in like 10 new engineers in a single month or a single week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that it becomes more important for leaders of those specific cells of the different facets of the company to make sure that other people in other cells are informed about what is top of mind and what needs to be solved from a like a meta perspective. So like you have your teams that are like, they are very focused and they're doing great work and they're doing great work inside their little cell, but they're not very good at communicating out the things that they're learning. And I think that as you grow as a leader of that organization, you have a responsibility to make sure that your retros coming out of those different cells that you have set up for the different facets of your product are communicating out the things that they're learning as they're iterating. Another thing that comes to mind is like a repository for information as a company. I think that there are a lot of tools that are popping up right now that help companies to be able to centralize their knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think those kind of like searchable databases, like kind of like a product wiki, but like an insights wiki kind of like for your company, for whatever you're doing. And I think that's where like an experience director, an experience agency really stands out to be able to help be the glue between those different teams. Because as you're growing really fast, you don't always have the opportunity to be able to scale across and connect all those different things. But I think there's an opportunity for a design team to be able to play a part in helping glue those different pieces together. And you might see that 10x result that you want out of being able to pull those insights out of each cell and get to that next level of growth, especially if like you want to keep seeing your growth numbers continue to evolve. And I think the biggest challenge is like making sure that those insights are shared across the organization. So appointing someone I don't know what you think about that.
Oh yeah, no, 1000%. I think that's one of the challenges that we see with a lot of our clients, and even internally with Wander too, is how do you continue to share knowledge of what's happened in the past or what are you working on? Like the amount of times like we've seen large enterprise clients that are just so disorganized, and you know the knowledge that a product manager within that company has is so different than a knowledge that the one of their designers might have. And it, you know, in a simple way, like it doesn't really make sense why there isn't a single repository, but it is something that I have seen, and I'm sure you've seen, is a challenge across board. So I agree. I think one of the ways to one of the ways to grow and collaborate more as a team is to have that singular repository of knowledge and where people can have a resource to have a baseline standard of like what they know about the product that they're building or the company that they're building, how they're building it, and even why they're building it. And that's actually a good segue to it's a good segue to remote work, right? When you're remote, everything has to be in a repository. Everything has to be communicated online. So I'd love to know for you, like, what's been your experience on building good collaborative processes and maybe some of the challenges of working remotely?
Yeah, so I think some of the challenges of working remotely, I mean, besides the obvious of like, you know, a lot of time we're seeing people from like waist up and we don't get to see like those tiny, like cues of like what they're actually thinking. Like, yeah. Are their feet dancing around underneath the table and are they ready to run?
Are they wearing pants?
Yeah. Like, does that happen? No one knows. Like, yeah, but man, that's awesome. Yeah. So I think that, one of the things that you miss from working remotely is being able to touch base with people on a regular basis at the same time every day. And one of the things that can build culture and build trust and build transparency, I think, is having a place for people to regularly touch base at a regular time. Like, and those moments happen in the real world where everyone clocks in at 9 a.m. and they're walking through the door at the same time and where they're placing their lunch boxes or whatever in the same like place or like they show up to the same cafeteria. But now we don't have cafeterias. We have like these moments in our day where we can choose to make place and space for people to talk, or we can not. And in some ways, I think it's so the challenge there from my perspective is making it exciting enough that they want to show up, because we can do whatever we want now, sort of in that free time. So noon rolls around and I could go down to like the bodega in this city that I'm working in remotely and then check out the beach. And so the challenge for working remotely is building a culture where people want to share that experience with other people and or the information that you or the relationships that you're cultivating in that time need to be strong enough that like they will want to stay and or not go to the bodega and the beach, but like share that space with other people at that time. I don't know. That's a problem that I think other people are trying to solve with things like the metaverse, which I don't know that I even really care to get into. That freaks me out a little bit. Yeah. But maybe that'll work. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to the metaverse. I know it's here to stay. Me personally, I have horrible motion sickness. So I put on the Oculus. I'm like, nope, not for me. I'm going to be one of those old people who are like, I'm not going to convert to technology. I guess touching upon like remote culture, you know, I remember before COVID, because Wander's always been remote, and our clients had a very difficult time wrapping their heads around the fact that like we were working remotely. And one of the questions was, how do you guys even collaborate, or how do you ensure that you're getting the most creative output when you don't have the same people in a room? And it's certainly a challenge, right? Like you can put 10 people in a conference room, whiteboard, and you have like scribbles all over the whiteboard and you're being creative and you get to the solution. But I also feel like, you know, if this, for us at least, like in our process, it gets us to a different way to get to the same, it makes us get to the same result in a different way, right?
Just thinking through that a little bit more, and I've been remote for 8+ years now. And before that I was, you know, in-house. both agency side and client side. You know, worked with like very large clients, very and small clients, you know, all types of maturity and product. I think that in some ways working remotely is really efficient. Okay. Instead of putting stickies on a board and then having to like retranslate them into a digital thing and then cluster them again, like, oh man, all that time and just like redigitizing everything, that's bonkers. Like to me, thinking about that now, I'm like, thank goodness we could just, you know, do it remotely. So I feel like in some ways it's actually a lot better. It's a lot better.
Oh, 100%.
And the freedom to be able to take that knowledge that we're creating together as a group to cluster it, organize it, and make it actionable is way easier. Now, and I would argue that those benefits might outweigh the challenges on the other side. And eventually, even in a real world environment, I could see a microphone picking up the conversation, you know, taking it, dictating it, and then we take that, we send it to another tool that is going to, you know, cluster it by topic, and then you have a report at the end of your meeting when you talk about like the top 10 things that need to change and the people that need to be accountable and all the things. It's just like,
And when you mentioned like, you know, the time and being efficient, you know, we have tools like Miro, which is like an online whiteboard, or FigJam, where you're inputting all your sticky notes and your design and other notes in one space. And for me, it's not even about efficiency, but more so, in my experience, I've felt a more enriched experience for people who would normally be a little bit more shy, right? So what I mean by that is, if you're in a room full of people, usually the loudest are the ones who get their ideas on the board. Whereas when you're having remote collaboration, it's almost like, okay, everyone's going to take a turn, or at least the facilitator could know like, okay, Rick hasn't said any, I haven't heard from Rick in a while. Let me pull some ideas from him.
So there's
a little bit of the facilitation part. But what I also really enjoy about using Miro or FigJam is, and the way that we do our design thinking workshop, is the fact that like everybody has a sticky note. You have to put in your thoughts, your ideas, or whatever it is. And then at the end, there's a big discussion. So I think remote work allows that to have a more enriched conversation. And then the third part of why I like remote workshops and remote collaboration is that everything gets recorded. So you're not, you know, hurrying to write everything down. And it's like, oh my God, what did Sally say? Like you can always go back and reference it. So I've also been remote for, I don't know, going on 7 or 8 years now. And there's part of me that's like, oh man, like I want to go to an office and see people. But I also know that I'm a much better performer and much more efficient with my time, with my collaboration when I'm working remotely with my team.
Yeah, same. I love that thought that you had about different personality types and how they want to engage the conversation. And yeah, I do agree. I think that people that tend to sit back a little bit more in the conversation do have space to be able to engage a little easier. And that is really helpful, especially when you're talking about collaborating across different disciplines.
Oh, yeah. So what other advice do you have for companies? I know we're 2 years out now from everyone going remote, but like what other advice do you have for those who want to continue to be remote and they're seeing challenges of being collaborative with their team?
I guess one thing that I think would be helpful for people is be open to evolving what it means to be remote and what it means to be in person. And I think that I would challenge people to start thinking about the time that we have together, where can we have the most value for that time together? Like, what moments can we create more value than remote? And I don't know.
Can you be more specific on that?
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't know. It could be such a polarizing topic because I think some organizations really want that in person. I think that I would challenge leaders to think through the value of having everyone in a meeting room where it's more of a stand up or something like that. Like, do we really need to be in the same room? Like, if it's more,
can that be an email?
Yeah. Like, where do we need to be in a meeting? What is the purpose of meeting, and when do we need to actually meet?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I can go on and on about that because like, I hate meetings so much. And like, I know that like, we're up around 30 people. And as the leader of this team, I should be like, oh yeah, more meetings. I got to check in on every. I hate meetings so much. I think it's the most inefficient way to get information that you need, that you can send over, either a project management tool, email, or Slack. There are so many ways to check in on status. I think where meetings are most important and need to continue to be used in a remote setting is, one, that human connection, just checking in with people, making sure they're doing okay, and being close to creating the experience of walking into an office together. And then the second thing is the collaboration. So, let's spend the next, 30 to 90 minutes brainstorming and getting the best ideas out there and doing a mini remote workshop. But like, I just hate meetings. I hate meetings if it's just for status. It's like, I don't really need to check in whether you're working on something or not. At least that's my philosophy. Less meetings, the better.
Yeah. In terms of like helping people to manage the whole like remote, not remote conversation, I think looking at the time that you actually need to be in person together and taking a more critical approach to what that means to work together. Hey, it kind of comes back to collaboration. Like, what does it mean to collaborate? And when are we getting that 10x benefit from being interdisciplinary with our efforts? And I think, being more cognizant of that time would probably be helpful. You probably save a lot of money too, right? Like, you're not spending all your time getting people together where they're just like, six out of the nine people in the room are just sitting there like with their hands folded on their lap and wondering when the clock's going to change to the next hour so they can get out of the room. Like, if people aren't active in their spot, they should just leave. Yeah. Should just be able to leave. I got to go. Yeah.
Yeah. And one really powerful exercise too is just writing down like what are all of your weekly recurring meetings, seeing how much you're spending the time on those. Because you'd be surprised, you might be spending like 20 out of your 40 hour work week just sitting in meetings. And then from that exercise, try to score from like 1 to 5, how important it is for you to actually be in that meeting. And if you have a bunch of ones where like you can do without it, then you're wasting, half your work week on meetings that you feel you're not even adding value to. So switching over to a different topic for a bit, because I know you used to freelance before joining us at Wander. How do you as a freelancer, join in on this collaboration with your clients? Because oftentimes you're kind of like the anomaly to a team.
I think it depends on the type of client and where they're at in the maturity of being able to work together. And I would put them in like different buckets in my brain in terms of like their ability to create together. If the organization is mainly autocratic and like you have one person that's kind of like calling the shots and everyone else is delivering, kind of like a vending machine kind of model with your team, then it's about like helping the leader that to understand the value that he's going to get out, or he or she's going to get out of like making decisions in a more collaborative way. If it's a type of environment where people are it's growing really fast and they are they're unable to stay organized, I might show up and I just might be like there to help facilitate the organization so that they can all communicate effectively together.
What does that look like? Can you elaborate?
Yeah, sure. So like if you are an organization that has lots of different parts and everything's moving around and it's really difficult for leaders, are so focused, you're growing so fast that you don't have the time to be able to kind of like do that extra 10% to get that value. I mean, like, I think that that might look like taking the requirements from engineering. It might look like making sure that I have a good understanding of where design is at within their design lifecycle, touching base with marketing and the growth team and figuring out like where they're at with their plans. And it looks like taking that information and making it applicable to each team. And it's just like translating the requirements that are coming out. It's because a lot of times you have like the growth team has these ideas for how X or Y needs to change on this page, and really that's an engineering requirement, but they tell design and the design's like, yeah, that sounds great, our design can do that, but it never gets back to engineering. And then you have like product is like really focused on this extra feature because they just had an interview with like 14 people in the survey that went out that means that they need to do this. And so like I think that in that type of organization, it's about just like organizing the information and being able to deliver it to the right people. No one's doing a bad job. It's just like at that point, I see myself as a facilitator to help everyone get on the same page. And that's what that looks like.
Oh yeah. It's that flow of information again, and having that singular repository or alignment of vision. And, again, we've seen so many clients on our end as an agency, and me also, I used to freelance, of making sure that everyone's aligned to the vision. And sometimes, a lot of times, that is not the case. And you come in, as a contractor, whether you're a freelancer or an agency, or even a new employee to a company, and sometimes your initial job isn't necessarily to produce the work, but making sure that you're facilitating that everyone is aligned and aligned to the vision and having the same expectations of output. Like I have so many stories of clients internally where they were just not even aligned to why we as an agency were even there to produce work. You know, they're like, oh, Wander's here to do research. No, Wander's here to do design. No, Wander's here to do strategy. It's like, well, we're actually here to do everything, but you guys got to help us help you prioritize what's most important, because all these different stakeholders, we're fine to do approvals with all of you guys, but we need to make sure you are all aligned with what you need and want. And so, like, you know, one of the things that we do as a team is come in and do a stakeholder interview to make sure that there's no gap in the expectation and on their vision.
That's one of my favorite parts of our process. I love that. I think that, it's so valuable. And I think it helps build that trust between people, especially in organizations that are like highly complex in their hierarchy, mm-hmm. like just for people to be able to see like, oh yeah, like my main emphasis and my main goal for this project is not too far off from what yours is. And, mm-hmm. or, oh my gosh, like it is different than what yours is. Now we can have a conversation. Now we can bring it out in the light. Now we can talk about it. Now it's not, and that helps build trust because, that communication, you might just not have had tools as an organization to talk about those problems because they weren't identified or they were really difficult to describe. And yeah, that's really helpful, especially as it gets complex.
So you mentioned that some of these companies might not have the right tools to facilitate or extract the information that they need. I'm curious, what are some of the best tools that you've used or processes you've used to make sure that the companies are collaborating the way that they should?
Yeah, great question. If you haven't already moved to a cloud architecture for your organization, I think that's a big one. And some people might be like, why are you saying that? But like I think people would be surprised how many companies, especially larger, more complex organizations, are still running like these instances of like Microsoft that are like installed on-prem and really difficult to work with, and
the government.
So that's a good example. But like, a cloud-based architecture that is secure, resilient, and that will enable you to be able to be on the same page with people in a new way. Just like the feature to be able to collaborate in a like multiplayer type of like setting. Google Docs does that well. Miro does that well. Figma does that well. I think some of the new Microsoft Office 365 products do that well. Like that is, I think people really, that is a silent feature that is just, it provides so much value. It's crazy.
For me, when I'm thinking about tools, yes, there's FigJam, Figma, Miro. I think those are all fantastic tools. I'm just thinking more of the collaborative tools and processes that you can incorporate into the companies. So I have more ideas on that. So if anyone wants to reach out and brainstorm with me on that, I'm here. but we are running out of time. So Rick, I'd love to hear from you. Any last advice you have for companies that want to just have more collaboration in their team?
Yeah, I think, take it one day, one quarter at a time, set goals, measure it. And I think that we are here to encourage you and to help you to not burn out. I think that's it. That's all I got. I don't know if that's a good preamble or not. But yeah,
that's great. So Rick, how can people reach you and collaborate with you? What's the best way to connect?
Yeah, the best way to connect is to reach out to us at Wander, and we will get back to you to talk about what you have going on. We would love to hear about it.
Awesome. Any social media you want to share, or scrap that?
I'll scrap that for now. I'm not ready yet. Okay. I'm not celeb status like you yet. So I can't. Oh, no.
Okay. Well, All right.
I'm working on it.
You're working on it. Okay.
Yeah.
Any last closing thoughts you want to share?
I think the biggest thing that I would want people to walk away with is just make space for people to be human. And see how your organization changes.
I love that. Allow
my challenge to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Rick's challenge is allow people to be more human. My challenge is to hold them accountable. So between those two,
what a team!
Exactly. What a team. All right, Rick. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you later.